The Triathlon Show 421. Hey, what's up everybody, and welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and on today's episode I interview Craig Kirkwood. Craig is a triathlon and running coach from New Zealand, most well known for coaching Hayden Wild. He's been on the show before, back in episode 220, which I will link to in the episode description if you want to go back and have a listen to that one as well. In this particular interview, we talk about Hayden Wild and his training, and then we also do a longer segment of questions related to age groupers and training and racing improvements that you might be able to do for yourself. But before we get into the interview with Craig, big thanks to our sponsors, Form. The Form Smart Swim Goggles give you real-time feedback in your swim training right on the goggle lens, including splits, pace, stroke rate, and heart rate. This means that you can execute your swim workouts better and also have more objective data to help you understand where your biggest points for improvements might lie. Form also recently introduced additional metrics related to technique and efficiency in the water, for example, related to your head rotation during breathing and your head position when in neutral body position. These metrics can give you even more insight in where you might need to work and improve. You can get 15% off the goggles with the code TTS15 on formswim.com/TTS. And thank you to Zenate. The Zenate indoor swim trainer allows you to improve your technique, power, and swim training consistency even when you're short on time. It's a great tool for busy athletes because you can do a quality workout in just 15 minutes at home, even on days when you don't have time to get to the pool. It is a perfect complement to pool and open water swimming as it allows you to focus specifically on key aspects of your swimming like your catch and your power and isolate them more easily than you can in the water. You can try the Zenate risk-free for up to 30 days, so if you don't love it, just send it back. And you can get 20% off your first order on zenateswimtrainer.com/TTS. Now without any further ado, here's the interview with Craig Kirkwood. Welcome back to That Triathlon Show, Craig. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure. It's been about 200 episodes or so since you were last on. So maybe we start with an introduction for those listeners that are a bit newer and haven't heard of you before.
Yeah, well, it's been a while. I think it was early 2020 when I was last on. So thank you very much for having me on. So for those who don't know me, a little bit of my background, I live in Tauranga in New Zealand, which is a small beach town on the northeast coast of the North Island in New Zealand. I grew up in an even smaller town on the east coast of the South Island called Timaru. I live here with my wife and my kids, two teenage boys. Neither of them do triathlon or in running, but both are pretty active doing their own thing, so that's cool. I started life as a runner, ended up going to the US on a scholarship where I got my sports science degree. And post that, I ended up moving to London where I worked in athlete management, so which kind of kickstarted my coaching career, really. I started working for Kim McDonald, who had a stable of world-class Kenyan runners, and that's where my coaching career kind of kicked off, and I really got absorbed into that kind of high-performance world. Probably the first Olympic campaign that I kind of like to think of as being part of, involved with, was the 2000 Olympics with Olympic 1500 meter runner Noah Nying. So I was part of his campaign to win that gold. So it was kind of my first Olympic medal campaign when I look back on it. So it's pretty special times, and it's a long time ago now, but it's still pretty vivid in my memory. Personally, I ran a couple of world cross countries, half marathon world champs, went to the Com Games as a marathoner. And in 2008, I tried to qualify for Beijing Marathon and failed in that attempt. And I said to my brother-in-law at that time that if I didn't make Beijing, I would do an Ironman with him the following year. So we entered Ironman New Zealand in 2009, and that's where it all began for me. I started my formal coaching business in 2013, and yeah, it's just growing from there. So it's been a pretty exciting 10 years. I started coaching Hayden in 2016, or the end of 2016, after he got inspired by watching Rio, and yeah, the rest has been history, really.
Yeah, and just to add on that, you do coach a bunch of age groupers, I think, in both running and triathlon. So it's not just the high performance athletes going for the Olympics, but it's a good mix.
Yeah, it's a huge mix, actually. I've got some people who just kind of like to run some half marathons, and and I've got a whole bunch of junior athletes who compete at national level on the track and in triathlon. So it's a massive mix, and I every single one of their journeys inspires me to help them and to be better than they were yesterday. So not just all about high performance.
Yeah. Today, do you find running or triathlon more inspiring to coach, or is it more about just helping the individual and not so much about the sport itself?
Yeah, I think athletics is my kind of my first love, I guess. So it'll always be special to me. Helping them is cool, seeing their journey and comparing it to kind of where I was at their age, and then as they grow up and through their careers. But I just like the fact that kind of the athletes are getting better day by day, and they're making progress and getting gains and enjoying themselves. So that's what really motivates me to do what I do.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the first main topic, which I want to chat a bit about Hayden Wild's progression to the top of the sport. And I'm sure that the goal now is to try to win a gold in Paris. When we last spoke, as you said, early 2020, I tried to look up his results, and from what I could see, he had just had a breakout result in the Tokyo test event earlier in 2019. Yeah. But before that, he was kind of getting towards that, fighting for podiums, but more top 10s were good results, sometimes a top 5 or so. So he wasn't consistently on the podium and winning like he is now. So, and then obviously he went on to take the bronze medal in a great race, fantastic race in Tokyo. So, and since then has just gone from strength to strength. So can you talk us through a bit this progression that he's had over the last few years?
Yeah, I think if we rewind back to 2016, he came to the sport from a multi-sport and off-road background. He had a desire to go to the Olympics and decided that triathlon was going to be the way there. His swimming was and is still a gap. So we spent the best part of those 4 years really till Tokyo actually trying to be in the race and at the front of the race. And that was kind of the goal, was like, let's get you fit enough and to the point where we can actually be at the front and be a contender. And really since then, the focus has been, how do we tweak this to try and win those races? So it's been a bit of a natural progression. Like now he's racing, racing at the front consistently. Like, what can we do different to get those wins and be in the mix? That's really been the difference in the mindset, I guess. And that's come around through just changing some of the sessions and being a little bit more specific about what we do in those sessions to try and get the edge over the athlete, over the competitors.
Do you have some examples of that, of those small changes that you made?
Oh, just some of the run sessions that we do. He trains a lot with Sam Tanner, who's an Olympic 1500 meter runner. So that's a really perfect synergy, in terms of closing speed over it, when you're getting dusted up on the track by a 1500 meter guy constantly, and just working on that speed. So, Alex is obviously the main competitor that we kind of look at in terms of run speed. Currently, he's got good closing speed and a good track background, so he's kind of always a bit of our litmus test for are we being successful, are we doing the right things.
Do you have an example of a good session that Hayden might do going into an important race, a run session with that kind of speed work, like going into something like the grand final or so this year?
So we might do something really simple, like a session of 200s with a 200 jog recovery, and those, are designed to be as quick as, he can run them without hurting himself. And so that would probably be kind of around the, 26 to 27 second mark, and then, jog round recovery. So do a set of those, something like 400 or 500 meters as a progression. So each 100 getting a little bit faster than the last. So until the last one being kind of almost a full sprint. So so just sessions like that, just to get the edge and try and teach them how to, really find that top end speed at the end of the race.
Yeah. And other than his progression and what he's needed to do to get to the front and then now to try to win those races, have you seen a significant change in the racing as a whole, how the field has progressed, how the demands have changed, basically how the field has become faster in different disciplines. What do you think has happened in that perspective?
Yeah, there's definitely been a mix of the way the races have panned out. For the most part, they've come back together, and it has been the runners that run off the front. But we've seen a couple of instances where, particularly with the French, they've worked as a team and driven that front pack on the bike and stayed away. And I think the last two grand finals have been a really good example of that. So it's definitely something that we're conscious of, and that we're working to mitigate. So and hopefully we're successful. But yeah, I think as a whole, it's the run level has lifted for everyone. I think it's pretty plain to see. But I still think that to win in Paris is going to take a sub 28:30 off the bike to win. So that's what our focus is.
Mm. And I was looking through some results from pre-Tokyo and now from this year, and I'm not convinced that my scientific method was on point there, because they weren't the same races. Obviously courses are different and maybe the sample size wasn't big, but the races that I looked at, the results across both sprint and Olympic distance, it looked like the swim is quite a bit faster now as well. So it's maybe not very visible to see, but that's something that it seemed to be the case that swim is faster. But nevertheless, Hayden is clearly faster because he's closer. It's not that he's a front pack swimmer, but he's closer to be in a good position there into T1. So can you talk about how he's worked on his swim? What kind of improvements have you seen there? What kind of training has led you to those improvements?
Yeah, you're right. The swim has definitely changed. And I think and that also comes down to the people who are in those swim groups. And we've seen the re-entry, I guess, if you like, of Henry back into the WTCS fold. And he'll definitely have an impact on the front of those swim fields. So, So those races have changed a little bit, but they're not always consistent. Hayden's swim is always, like I said before, it's always been a gap. And we've constantly been a work on right since 2016. So, and I think really his improvement has just been consistency over time. Like he's just got better year on year. We've continued to evolve on what we're doing in that space and tried a few different things over time. And each little thing that we try is compounding and getting him closer and closer to the front. We did some work a couple of years ago on his stroke. And we used some, power plates that we had here from High Performance Sport New Zealand, which we used to just identify, holes in his stroke and then try to patch those with some technique work. So we've done some small things like that to improve, and which we're continuing to look at and evolve as we go along.
What is his typical weekly volume of swimming?
He's generally swimming six times a week, and those sessions are probably around 5 to 6 kilometers at a time, probably on average. So, yeah, so it's a reasonably big volume. But when you don't come from a swim background, you kind of have to have that volume to be competitive at the front, or to be anywhere near them, really. Yeah.
And are there some staple workouts that are the most important ones in the program, working more on the takeout speed required or sustained threshold, or both equally important?
Both equally important. I think that takeout speed is critical in the WTCS racing. If you get caught in the pack, then you end up in a fight at the first buoy, and Hayden's definitely been a victim of that a few times. So, that's seen him come out mid pack or if even further back often. So, and the days that he has, a good breakout off the line, then we see him near the front. And I think Cagliari this year was a really good example of that. I think he was 12 seconds back from the lead out of the water. So, that was, a good example of a really, really good start from him.
Yeah. Cagliari was, that was a beach start, wasn't it? So does he benefit from that as well?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And coming from New Zealand, we're good at beach starts here because that's all our racing is like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So do you have an example session of that where you're working on takeout speed?
Yeah. So it's a dive start into you know, a quick 12 to 15 meters and then into a threshold kind of for about 50 or 100 meters. So, yeah, so sessions like that are really critical for him to make that improvement, yeah.
Yeah. The Olympics are coming up in 2024. We're 7 months away or so, 8 months perhaps. But regardless, what does this planning and periodization look like for between now and then?
Yeah, it's a good question. We debriefed last year, and as we all know, well, this year actually, we're still in 23. 23 was pretty successful for Hayden, but he had quite a few little ups and downs with different things that went wrong at different points in the year, which we couldn't do anything about. He got a flat first race in Abu Dhabi, finished 46th, which wasn't great. He crashed it on the way to the Paris test event, which was extremely disappointing for the whole team. You know, we were pretty confident that he was, you know, in contention for the win. He definitely would have been running off the bike with Alex that day. So it was a real disappointment to not be able to see where we were at on that course. So, but, you know, he bounced back really well mentally, went to Pontevedra, got a bit sick. It really didn't pan out as we would like. But we've made some changes to next year. We've streamlined the season a bit, so we definitely won't be racing anywhere near as much. Our focus will be 100% on Paris and being successful there, trying to mitigate as much travel as we can, so that we can just focus on the training blocks and minimize any illness and anything like that. So, and even right into the Paris, we'll be taking precautions so that we're not getting caught up with illness or fatigue on the trip into Paris. So.
Does that mean skipping quite a few of the WTCS races before Paris or throughout the year leading up into Paris?
Yeah. Yes. I won't go too much into what the exact plan is. We kind of want to keep that a little bit quiet for now. But it does mean that he won't be doing the full WTCS season.
Yeah. So that obviously gives some more room for more consistent, longer training blocks. I guess that's one important difference. Are there any other differences in training when you're looking to really peak for that one day, which is a bit different, I guess, from many other years, even though you have things like the grand final and so on, but still you're really trying to win a lot of races and win the series. So are there differences in the training that you can point to that you might make?
Yeah, I think this year we had two focuses. One was to win the World Series and one to win in Paris. Neither were successful. But I think this year or next year, sorry, 24, we'll be able to streamline the racing program, and which will allow us to just really focus in on Paris. And I think what it will do is allow us to maintain that base phase for a lot longer and revisit that when we need to after you know, the races that he does do. We'll be able to go back and have a nice consistent block in the lead up and uninterrupted by racing. So Hayden's actually pretty lucky in that he can go to a race and we can pretty much train through it with a small taper in, and he's robust enough to handle that and carry on. But I think not having the racing will allow us to be really specific, building straight into Paris and, yeah, hopefully a successful race there.
Yeah, and sometimes, as you say, the travel is harder than the race itself, and with the risk of getting ill and so on. So that makes a lot of sense. I'm actually not clear on the New Zealand selection policy. So has Hayden qualified, or is he selected already, or does he still need to get that selection?
Yeah, so our automatic qualifier was a podium in Paris, which he failed to do. So the secondary criteria on our policy was two top eights at a WTCS race. So he's met the secondary criteria along with Nicole van der Kay. So the two of them both have that. But it leaves them open to a selection. So I would anticipate that he will be selected. I can't imagine a world where he won't be. But Yeah, still not 100% confirmed. So we're just kind of waiting on that when the selection rolls around. But we'll be training with an eye that he will be selected and he'll be going to Paris. So,
yeah. I would assume without having any knowledge about it, but it seems like it would be extremely strange not to select him. So with that in mind, what I'm wondering is, for an athlete like Hayden, is the test event less important than an athlete like Alex, for example, where there is more competition? Or especially, let's look at the British women, where you have a massive amount of competition, or other teams and federations, the US women, the Germans, and other federations have that really strong emphasis on the test event to actually get the qualification. For Hayden, it has always seemed like he's going to be selected because he's just a standout performer, really, on the men's side in New Zealand. So is the test event still super important just to build confidence into Paris, or is it less so, would you say?
It had the importance of being an auto qualifier for our policy. So that would have been nice to go and tick that off and know 100% that he's going to be on the team. Our New Zealand Olympic Committee is pretty tough at times. So anytime you can secure your selection and put it out of reach or out of question for anyone is you know, a good move to do, but also a good opportunity to go to Paris, race on the course, be successful and know that you've done it before, which is what we did in Tokyo. You know, he went to the test event, got on the podium, returned back 2 years later, I guess it was, and did it again. So, so that was, you know, nice to know that we've done it once and we can do it again. Paris this year was, obviously had that crash on the way in, on the ride to the course in the morning, and hurt himself, and then wasn't able to run. So, but he swam and biked well enough that we took a lot of confidence out of that, and know that he's, you know, he would have been right in the mix, and as the way he was running leading into that race was, you know, indicating that he would have been, you know, going toe to toe with Alex right up until the end. So and who knows what would have happened.
Yeah. So in terms of training right now, are you already in kind of building the base, or is it a recovery period right now? What is going on at the moment?
Yeah, so he's just building base at the moment. He raced those couple of races in Australia on the way home after Super League, did the Noosa Tri and Melbourne 70.3, and then he spent a week in Fiji just relaxing. Another week back in New Zealand where he just rode his mountain bike and went for a couple of jogs around in the forest. And then followed up with a third week of pretty easy kind of training, just getting out there moving again. And that's always a tough week for him. He doesn't like taking time off at all. So, having kind of 2 weeks of almost forced break is, makes him a bit itchy, and that next week was a bit rough, but he's bounced back pretty well. He's done a session on the track yesterday where he's actually pacing a 5,000 meter race on Saturday, so we thought we'd better stick him on the track and make sure he can actually run fast enough to do it, but just in a base phase really. So it's just building.
So I want to ask you then, can you take us through a full training week, and maybe it is right now in this starting to build a base phase, or if you prefer you can pick another week from earlier in the year, but I'll leave it up to you, but just walk us through Monday until Monday through Sunday, what a sample training week from Hayden has looked like.
In generic terms, he would swim 90 minute sessions Monday to Friday, which is pretty consistent year round. We often chuck in a Saturday session in the pool, but more of as a recovery than anything else. So, and a bit of technique work. He's riding 5 or 6 times a week, long rides at the moment, kind of 4 to 5 hours on the bike. He's a good enough rider naturally without having to do too much work at this time of year. So it's really just aerobic riding, and he's just spending time on the bike and getting the hours done. So he's nothing special there. And in terms of his running, that's our big focus, is getting that run volume up. So he's doing, you know, two long runs a week and one session a week where, you know, we're just keeping that nice and steady and not doing anything crazy in that. So it's just, you know, I mean, it changes all the time, but like a variety of, you know, 1 kilometer reps, but nothing faster than about, you know, 3 minutes, 3:05 pace for him. And for him, that's not super quick. You know, that's pretty comfortable, and he can knock those out with pretty short recoveries and not be hurt from it. So.
What is the biking volume at the moment?
He's probably at around maybe around 550 to 600 k's a week. But yeah, and we'll just build on that. I mean, it's only been back 2 weeks, I think, really, into kind of decent volume. So we'll just build on that and see how much we can push it out.
Yeah. By the way, did he spend a lot of time on the time, or I'm assuming the answer is no, but did he spend some time on the time trial bike leading into Melbourne and Noosa?
Yeah, he did. Well, not a huge amount, because he flew straight from Super League in Neom to Australia and hadn't really spent any time on the bike until then. So he's probably spent 2 weeks in the build up to Melbourne on the time trial bike, but he did get it fitted properly when he was in Europe. And so, yeah, he went to Germany and got on the velodrome and got fitted out properly and was nice and aero and was comfortable on the bike. So it wasn't actually too much of a shift for him.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's good then. Yeah, and running wise, so two long runs. How long are those long runs?
The longer one's probably about 2 hours, and then maybe an hour and a half for the second one, hour 20 to hour 30 for the second long run. So, you know, two of those each week. And just keeping the volume up in between. Yeah.
And is that kind of steady, let's call it zone two running, or is it more just easy time on feet?
Probably in zone two, I guess, if you're putting it into zones. I wouldn't use that terminology, but yeah, we just call it like a general aerobic kind of conditioning run. So, you know, for him, that's anywhere between, you know, 4 minutes and 4:10 pace per kilometer, which is pretty comfortable kind of running for him.
Yeah. And the running volume overall, what is that at the moment, and what are you looking to build up to?
He's probably at around 100 kilometers at the moment, but we'll be looking to push that as high as we can get it without impacting on everything else. So,
and what do you think that will be?
Well, in the past, we've been able to get to 160 Ks. Obviously the bike volume will have to come down a little bit when we get up that high, but we'll try and get it there. We'll see how much time we've got during summer in New Zealand. Mm. At least it's a good time to be out running in the sun.
All right. Yeah. So it's a proper base phase. Definitely. Sounds like lots of aerobic training. I want to ask you as well about Melbourne. He qualified for Zone 3 Worlds with that.
Yes.
And I guess that's something that is on in the cards then for after Paris.
Yeah, definitely. It's in his hometown. He was born in Taupo and wants to try and race there and try and win that world title on home soil, if you like. And it'd be pretty special racing world champs and in New Zealand. Yeah. So it was too good to pass up.
Will that be the main focus after Paris, or will he still be focusing on things like the grand final, Super League? Or is it really focusing on Taupo?
Well, that'll probably be the next big focus. I think we'll obviously you'll do the grand final and those things, but the focus will be on Taupo after that.
All right. So let's move on to topic two for today, which is training and racing for age groupers. I want to ask some tips around a number of topics here.
Yep.
So I often ask about training, but sometimes I neglect to ask about racing. So I'm going to start with on that end, asking for racing advice from you. What advice do you have for age groupers on how to get the most out of themselves on race day? This can still include things in the near vicinity of race days or leading up to racing, but also, of course, things that you actually do on race morning and on the race course.
Yeah. I think there's some really critical things that people get wrong a lot. And one of the big ones is the taper. I think that they come in not rested enough. And I think sometimes they get caught up in lots of formulas that they find online and things like that, especially if they're kind of managing their training themselves, or if their coach hasn't quite understood their demand or their needs necessarily, and that they come in not rested enough. So I would say that they find their own formula to that, and learn what it means to show up on the start line nice and fresh and ready to go, both physically and mentally as well. So probably the next big one is getting their nutrition right. During the race, and then also kind of pre-race, in that they're not getting to the start line without any fuel in their body. So those are probably the two big ones, I think, on race day. Maybe the next one would be to actually listen to their body a bit more, not get so focused on the data that they're looking at on their Garmin or their head unit, and that they're actually listening to their body and understanding how that feels, and judging their effort a little bit more on that rather than the numbers that they're looking at. Sometimes the numbers can be a bit deceiving, depending on the course and the conditions and the competition and things like that. So, but if you're listening to your body all the time and keeping a gauge on how it's feeling and, you know, how deep you're digging, they can have a more successful race if they can understand that and get better at it.
Yeah, no, those are good tips. About the taper, what would you say that when you think that people don't get to the start line fresh enough, do you think it's more related to maybe starting the taper too late or maybe still trying to do a bit too much within the taper, or do you think it's a combination of both?
Probably a combination of both, but probably trying to do more in the taper than they need to. You don't want to come in with having 2 weeks off. You'll feel awful if you get on the start line and not done anything for 2 weeks, but also equally you'll feel awful on the start line if you've come in and done too much. And I know that sounds really ridiculous because it's quite a hard balance to get right. But I think if you peel back the intensity, and when I'm prescribing, this might make it a little bit clearer, but when I'm prescribing intensity, I quite often talk, you know, in general aerobic terms and then easy terms. So if I'm having someone do, an easy hour run, that might be, 30 seconds slower than their general aerobic kind of run. And so just that difference could be enough to bring them to the start line a lot fresher, and that they've just backed off the intensity in their total volume in the build up. You can still do a couple of easy sessions in that maybe 2 week block leading in. Sorry, my computer's beeping at me. You can do some sessions in that lead up in that 2 week block, but even those, the intensity and the duration of those sessions can be peeled back a little bit, and the recoveries between the reps be extended so that you're actually recovering and not digging yourself a nice deep hole to try and climb out of before race day.
Yeah, I think with the sessions there that you do in the taper period, a lot of it is about also getting your confidence in the right place. So if you're self-coached, set yourself up for success rather than for failure. So don't try to do a session with really short recoveries where you have a bigger risk of not being able to do it as well as you should. It's better to just rest a bit longer, like get those reps done well, feeling good, feeling strong, and then you have that good confidence, good mental state going into the race.
Yeah, you want to walk away from those lead up sessions, like you say, with the confidence that you're going to be able to stand on the start line and deliver the performance that you're after. If you go onto the start line second guessing and questioning, if you've got it right, you're less likely to perform well.
Yeah, about nutrition, I just think, I want to echo what you said there about nutrition on race day. And of course, that's something that I think that most people now know. Well, I don't know. A lot of people think about that and do a decent job of it. I think I would actually say that especially for longer races where really glycogen stores and carbohydrate becomes energy, basically becomes a limiting factor for many. Yeah. Not getting in enough carbs beforehand, I think, is maybe a more common mistake even than failing with your nutrition on race day itself, because that does require some thinking. And that's where I think that a lot of people just get swept away and just try to wing it. And winging it isn't necessarily going to be a successful strategy if you're going to do an Ironman and really need to have as much glycogen in your stores as you can before the race starts.
Yeah, and that's a tricky one, right? Because as we just talked about the taper, we're decreasing the volume and the intensity, and so the natural instinct for people is to maybe decrease their intake of food when really they should be doing the opposite and taking more food on so that they're fueling those stores and preparing the body for battle, if you like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so let's go on to some training advice questions. So can you give maybe two tips for each of the disciplines? So let's start with two tips for improving your swimming performance for an age grouper.
So maybe trying to refine your swim stroke and get that correct. So slowing down before you can speed up is a term that's bandied around quite a bit with swimming, and that you get that technique down pat before you try and increase the volume rather than swimming a lot with poor volume, and then just keeping the consistency up with your swing so that you're not kind of having a couple of really good weeks and then not swimming for 2 weeks. So just be consistent with it in whatever numbers of times a week that you can get to the pool.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll add to that one because I recently had the realization here that we had a few bank holidays and I kind of messed up my own swimming around those bank holidays when I couldn't swim and lost the swim that I wanted to get in. So I think that I'll add that note that keep track of your pool's opening hours. Obviously, this is something I see with my athletes as well, that sometimes they have a session plan but they didn't realize that it's going to be pool maintenance, it's a bank holiday or whatever it is, but that swimming does require a little bit more planning and preparation in that sense.
Yeah,
but it is so important, as you say, to keep the frequency up. So I think that's an important thing to stay on top of. That is maybe it's quite easy to miss, and as I've done myself.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to biking. There are two tips for biking.
I think the first tip is to spend some time and some money on getting a decent bike fit and making sure, I'm assuming we're talking long course, get as aero as you can possibly get, but also maintaining the comfort and the ability to deliver power and then still get off the bike and run. So there's lots of components there to think about, but I think it's worth doing that over most things. And ideally, this is maybe the second tip or part of the first tip, is that they buy the bike that fits them rather than trying to fit themselves onto the bike that they've purchased because they like that particular model. I think that's really critical that they understand what bike they fit on rather than the other way around. Yeah.
So would you recommend maybe going and having a fit before purchasing on a fit bike, getting your measurements and getting some recommendations from the fitter based on that pre-bike fit around what bikes are most suitable for the person?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. In the ideal world, it's not always practical, I know, but I think if they've got the ability to do that, then that's something that they could really make some big gains on. I mean, it's an expensive job buying a new bike. I think if you're going to do that, you might as well do it properly. Yeah, get the fit done first and then buy the bike that's recommended that you can adjust to get into that position.
No, that's a great point. And I think if that's not possible, if that's not available to you, then maybe even just understanding your body proportions. Do you have a longer torso or longer legs, or are you fairly in the middle balanced? And then it can be that's a good starting point for figuring out which bikes might or might not be so suitable to you, because I think that's quite often where you can have a basically purchasing the wrong bike if you have an unusually long torso or unusually long legs, and then you just end up with the bike that happens to kind of fit the opposite person better than you.
The second thing there is if they're training for a particular race, they study the profile of that course and and then start looking around at their local terrain and trying to mirror the course as closely as they can, or at least parts of that course, so that when they're riding, you know, on the race course, they can they can almost look down and kind of go, yep, I've been on this hill before, or I've raced this part of the course before, kind of and more of a mental thing than anything, but also like just understanding the demands of each climb, what it might look like and what it might feel like. So that's definitely can definitely help.
Yep, excellent. And finally, two tips for running.
I think the biggest tip is that the long run is your friend, and the more consistent long running you can do, the better you'll be come race day. I think if you were to have a choice of doing a long run or doing a workout, the long run would win every day in terms of, you know, bang for buck. And I think try and incorporate as many hills into your running as you possibly can. And I've always used the term that hills are speed work in disguise. So you can really use your climbing where you're running and riding for that matter to get some pretty big gains without the hurt of being on the track, or, you know, being on a measured loop where you're doing reps and things like that. So it's almost an organic speed work into your running. So yeah, those are my two tips for running.
Yeah, that's excellent. With the long run, how long would you build it up? And that might be different, but let's say for an Ironman, how long would you build it up for the specific preparation for the race?
It depends. It would depend on the person. So if they've come from a background of an experienced background of running, or, you know, even an Ironman athlete, and they're confident they can run, you know, the 42 kilometers, then I wouldn't go too far or close. You know, I wouldn't go too close to that. Maybe around 34 kilometers, something like that, 35 kilometers. But for someone who's never done it before, maybe they might like to run that distance at least once, just for the confidence that they can actually, you know, run that far. That would be less ideal. But I think around that 34 to 35 kilometer mark is probably the limit. I think anything beyond that, you start doing a lot of damage to the legs that takes a bit of time to recover from, and so it impacts on what you're going to do the next day and the next week.
Yeah. That made me think about another question that's not in our notes, by the way, but what do you think about if you want to do well in an Ironman, but also in a marathon? Do you have any thoughts on how to combine the two? How long do you need between them? And also, what is the kind of the sequencing of that? I've always felt that, or not always, but I guess more recently, I felt that sometimes when you try to do a marathon, for example, in February, March, April, of course, the closer you get to the actual Ironman, the more you're basically compromising your triathlon training. If you do it earlier, it's better. But still, I've had experiences where doing a marathon in February might still be a compromise for summer racing and even like late summer racing. So I've kind of been on the side of do your triathlon races in the summer. Now I'm talking a Northern European or Northern Hemisphere summer, and then aim for doing a marathon in, let's say, November, December, and you can build on that fitness that you gain from the triathlon season, and you can then focus fully on the marathon. I've basically seen that a lot of like experienced athletes, especially, they can build up a bit quicker to the marathon than building up to the Ironman, because it's only one discipline and you can really focus on it for that period.
Yeah.
But I want to hear where you come down on this issue, and it might be completely different.
Yeah, I mean, again, it probably depends on the person. But I think if you're doing your marathon prior to your Ironman, you're probably going to spend more time than you need to focusing on that. And then once you've run your marathon, the damage that it's going to do to your body, because you're probably going to go a little bit deeper than you would running off the bike. It's a natural tendency to run a little bit harder in a standalone marathon than you would off the bike at the end of an Ironman. So you probably end up doing a bit of damage to yourself that takes some time to heal, and that would impact on your ability to then train properly for the Ironman. So if you're doing your Ironman first, you built that a massive aerobic base on the bike, in the pool, you know, on your running, and then and then you can be more specific about the work you do for the marathon. So I think that that way probably is a more natural tendency. When I was, if I hark back to when I was a runner, we would always do a big block leading into a marathon, and I would always try and be really fast over 10,000 meters before I started my marathon block. And that was, you know, get really fit and fast and then be really specific for the event that we're targeting. So it's the same thing for Ironman and a marathon. I think it would be work better going that way.
And are there things that you think that amateurs should and should not learn or take away from the way that from what pro triathletes are doing in training or and or racing?
I think in training is pretty key is that they and I think if we relate it back to what Hayden has been doing over the years, you know, he spent the first few years trying to be fit enough to be at the front of the race and now trying to win. And I think you'll see the same with, you know, pro Ironman athletes is that they're trying to win races. So that the workouts that they're doing are geared around that rather than a lot of age groupers, you know, just trying to finish the race or, you know, do well in their age group. But it's not the the intensity is different and the outcomes are going to be different. So I think they should not look at them for the workouts that the pros are doing and focus more on what they need to be doing to be competitive. Yeah, because I think the demands are very different. And then also the intensities that the pros can ride at and run at related to their, you know, to their baselines are much tighter. But that's why they're pros, they can do that. So, yeah. So don't try and mimic them in that. Yeah,
that makes sense. And also things like the different duration of the event. So that also contributes to the intensity, of course. But that also means that it's you're basically training for a different event.
That's
if you're
right.
Training for a, let's say, 10-hour Ironman versus a 7:30 Ironman, or even a 12-15-hour Ironman.
Then that's right.
It's completely different.
Yeah.
And what about maximizing a limited time budget? Do you have any tips for that? How can you make the most of your time available if you have if you have 8 to 10 hours a week to train and you want to do especially longer triathlon races?
Yeah, I think it's just really focus on the basics. I had two athletes who won their age groups in Hamburg at the World Sprint Champs. They're both surgeons and are really limited, and they've got two kids. They're both limited, you know, how much they can do in a day. They're kind of 60 minutes to maybe to 90 minutes max during the week, and then, you know, a couple of hours on the weekend is probably their limit. So really not much time to be able to train properly. But we just, you know, made sure we got the basics right. So getting one long run done, and then one long ride. And I put that in commas because they weren't even that long. It was kind of like 2 hours. It's a long ride for them. But what we did do is tried to mix some intensity into those longer runs and rides so that they almost getting, a dual session done. It's not perfect and it's not ideal, but that was all the time they had. So we had to be a little bit more flexible and innovative with the sessions that they were doing. But yeah, just focus on the basics would be my key advice.
That's a great example. And also it shows that you shouldn't let chasing perfect be the enemy of the good, so to say. So
right.
Yeah, doing things based on your circumstances rather than trying to brute force what you think is perfect when that might not be a feasible thing to do in your circumstances.
That's right.
Maybe if we finish off this segment, do you have 1 to 3 additional pieces of advice that we haven't already talked about related to training, performance, improvement for age groupers?
I think I've already mentioned it, but I learned to train without the aid of the data. I think is really, really critical. I think a lot of athletes are far too reliant on the numbers that they're looking at, and I think if they can learn how that feels and dial into that a bit more, they'll gain a lot out of it. spend some time on their bike fit and getting aero. It's good bang for buck. And with their running, if they can run on soft surfaces, so just minimize the impact that they're getting into the legs. Keep your easy runs easy. And so, like I said before, that, you know, percentage of time per kilometer slower than, you know, an aerobic run. And so you can, you know, depending on what zones you're using and things like that, you can adjust that as you need. Keep any efforts that you do under control. So, yeah, just try not to do those too hard, like on the bike and on the run. Keep them specific and understand the purpose that's, you know, been prescribed. If you've got a coach and they're asking you to do, you know, work out at a certain intensity, there's a reason behind that. So try not to exceed that. Otherwise, you know, you could be training in the wrong zone and or doing, you know, harm to the work that is trying to be accomplished.
Yeah, great tips. And I have a few other general coaching questions. What is something that you've implemented, changed, or evolved in your coaching in the last few years?
Yeah, it's a big question, and I'm struggling with an answer to it. And it'll probably merge into the next question that you sent me. But it was one of the big things I'm doing at the moment is I'm part of a coaching course through High Performance Sport in New Zealand, and it's called a Coach Accelerator program. And so we've been spending probably about 18 months on this course, and we've been meeting maybe once every 6 weeks or so. And the big focus is around having tough conversations, but also around learning how to listen to someone in that conversation and ask the questions that might not be instinctual, but thinking a little bit circular, trying to understand where they're coming from. And then if we relate that back to a coaching environment, is that when we're talking to our athletes, we can get a little bit more understanding where they're thinking, where their thought processes come from, and trying to get in their pocket really and understand from their point of view, rather than trying to push my assumptions and my thoughts of what I think is right and what I think is correct onto them. So that's been a big thing recently. And I got asked an interview a couple of days ago whether my athletes have noticed that, and I'm not sure that they have, but I've noticed it, and I feel like I've gained a lot out of the ability to be able to do that. So it's been a big step.
No, that's really cool. And as you said, that maybe answers the next one, which is something you're trying to learn more about or focus on at the moment. Or is there anything else you want to highlight there as well?
No, that's probably the big one for me at the moment. It's been a big focus for the last year to 18 months. So.
All right. Yeah. And if you could visit your young athlete self and give yourself some good advice, what would you say?
So much. We could have a long conversation about this. But I think the main thing would be when I was a young athlete, we didn't have really a coach who controlled our output very well. And so we used to get carried away in workouts, and we used to try and, you know, do the big hero sessions. And if we were doing a set of 1K reps, we would just rip them as hard as we could. And I think, you know, we ultimately did more damage to ourselves than we got gains out of it. So I would go back and correct that. However, in saying that, that's probably created me as the coach that I am now, and that I can look back at those examples and go, that's not what to do. And that if I was doing them correctly, then I probably wouldn't be the coach I am now. So a bit of a catch-22.
That actually, it does lead me to a slightly different question, but you are coaching a squad of junior athletes, and I don't know exactly what the setup is and what equipment they have, but I think in a lot of similar settings where you have a squad of junior athletes, it's fairly organic, especially at the beginning when a new athlete joins the squad. They don't have it by computer or Garmin or anything. They don't necessarily know what paces they're running or what power they're pushing or anything like that, or even necessarily how they don't necessarily have that perception either of their effort, like what is RPE really. So how do you as a coach of that squad try to I guess, control their efforts? What is that process like? Does it take some time to get to the level where they really understand and internalize that?
Yeah, that's always an ongoing battle, especially with young boys, and if they're in a group, because they always want to show off, and they're always egging each other on. So always have to be careful how I prescribe their workout. So I always try and dial everything back. If I'm prescribing a run session, I'll dial back the pace that I want them to run at, because I know that they'll always go a few seconds faster than I prescribed, because you know the young male ego takes over. So it's a little bit of clever manipulation from the coach point of view. And then as they get older and older, they understand, you know, that's not to their advantage. So yeah, and I'm always talking to them at sessions about not racing each other and making sure they stay in control. So eventually it sinks in.
Yeah. All right. That's good. And yeah, I think that's all of the questions. Where can people find you and follow you?
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram just under my name, Craig Kirkwood. And then also on Facebook, I have a coaching account on there. So you can jump on those pages. I'm not very active on Facebook these days, but definitely on Instagram. I throw a few more things up there. So yeah, jump on there and have a follow.
Yeah, and I'll put a link to your website as well, and of course to the previous episode for people that want to listen to that. But yeah, thank you so much, Craig. It was great to have a chat, and good luck for the upcoming year with all your athletes, but with Hayden and going to the Olympics especially.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity to have a chat, and hopefully next time we talk, we've got a gold.
Yeah, let's shoot for that.
All right, thank you.
I hope that you enjoyed that interview. As always, you can find the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com, where I'll link to the previous appearance of Craig on the Triathlon Show, and also, of course, to his website and Instagram. Next Monday is the final episode of the year, and that will be a Q&A. I will be recording this Q&A tomorrow, so you can still send in questions if you're listening to this episode on the day that it's released on a Monday. So questions sent in today, Monday, still have a chance of getting included in next week's Q&A episode, which will be recorded tomorrow. So send in your questions if you want your questions answered to michael@scientifictriathlon.com, and that's Michael with a K. If you're interested in improving your triathlon performance and want help to achieve your goals, then consider working with a Scientific Triathlon coach or training plan. We have options for athletes of all different levels, for different budgets, and no matter the size of your goals. A few points that I want to highlight to reduce the barrier to get started is that we have no minimum commitment term nor startup fees for coaching. And for training plans, we have a 100% satisfaction guarantee for plans purchased on our website, and an exchange guarantee, so you can exchange your plan for another one if you purchase through Training Peaks. We also have consultation and customized plan options, so there's options for most needs. Find out more and contact us on scientifictriathlon.com, and we can discuss your specific goals and needs and see what's best for you. And finally, big thanks to our sponsors, Form, that you can find on formswim.com/TTS. Improve your swim training with real-time metrics like pace, stroke rate, and heart rate, and advanced post-swim analysis. Use the code TTS15 to get 15% off the Form Smart Swim Goggles. And thank you to Senate. Use the Senate Swim Trainer to improve your technique, power, and swim training consistency. Even if you have just 15 minutes at home available, you can get a time-efficient Senate workout done at home that will help you swim better and stronger. You can try the Senate risk-free for up to 30 days and get 20% off your first order on senateteamplayer.com/TTS. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.